Armstrong?
All right. I call this meeting of the House Finance Committee to order. Let the record reflect that it's 1:38 p.m. on Tuesday, the 25th of March, 2025. Present today are Representative Allard, Representative Hannon, Representative Johnson, Representative Bynum, I've done that before, a co-chair of Schrage, I see, Representative Stapp, Representative Tomaszewski, Representative Galvin, Representative Jimmy, co-chair Foster, and myself, co-chair Joseph. So we have a full committee. Also present today are House Finance Committee staff, Committee Assistant Helen Phillips, Paige Reed, Gardiner, Secretary Bree Wiley, Secretary Leah Frazier. Before we start, please mute your cell phones. In today's meeting, we will do two central things. We'll first hear public testimony on House Bill 56, the supplemental bill. This is the bill that was introduced yesterday, and I think a version N was adopted. We will then present and possibly not move, and I'll describe why I say possibly, action on amendments, four in particular, to House Bill 53 and 55, the operating and mental health bills. You'll find that one of them is denoted as House Bill 55, and that's because that's a requirement that that amendment appear in both bills. The reason I noted we may or may not is I want to take the temperature of the committee. Two of them, I think, are quite perfunctory. They are essentially governor's items that, for example, pay increases to salaries and the like. If, for example, you tell me, no, I want to amend those, then we will take up action tomorrow because your amendment deadline is not till 5 p.m. tonight. The other two, you may or may not be prepared to move, and that's fine. Before we open up public testimony for House Bill 56, remember that callers from Anchorage should call 907-563-9085. Callers from Juneau should call 907-586-9085. Non-LIO callers in other areas should call 844-586-9085. There are reports that the 844 number may not work with some carriers at this moment. If that is the case, please call the Juneau number again, and that is 907-586-9085. We will hear testimony until there are no more callers. I have a feeling this is going to be very short. I ask that testifiers limit their comments to no more than 2 minutes. We also welcome written testimony on the supplemental budget. Written comments should be submitted to House Finance, House.finance, at akleg.gov. We will welcome written testimony until 5 p.m. today. We are joined by two of our colleagues, Representative Colombe and Representative Ruffridge. All right, with that, I will open up public testimony. We're gaveled in for public testimony on the supplemental bill. Any testifiers present in the committee room? Seeing none, we will now go to the phone line. And as I predicted, there are no testifiers there. So I'm going to gavel out public testimony. That concludes public testimony on House Bill 56. We're going to set aside House Bill 56 and move on to our next scheduled item. As a reminder, amendments on House Bill 56 are due at 10 a.m., I believe, on Thursday. So I'm going to put 56 over there. Okay, we'll now take amendments to House Bill 53 and 55. These are, we'll call them the chair's amendments, the operating and mental health bills. If I suspect anything less than the will of the body, I'll withdraw the amendments and move the amendment again tomorrow. But we will move them so we can discuss them. Legislative Finance Division is in the room if members have any technical questions. The committee has been provided with four of the operating chairman's amendments. The four amendments are as follows. So we'll do this live action, as they say. The first amendment is an amendment to fold in collective bargaining unit salary adjustments. You'll see that's marked as Amendment 1. So for the moment, we're not moving these. I'm just telling you what's before us. The second amendment is, you guessed it, Amendment 2. An amendment to include House Bill 53 wordage, including intent, conditional language, and structure change. Many of these are items that were recommended by the subcommittees. Third amendment is an amendment to House Bill 55, the mental health budget, language section. This is the other amendment I said is fairly perfunctory. We can have it explained for us. The fourth amendment is an amendment to include the chairman's House Bill 53 language section changes. You will see a version of the previous draft that is blue-lined and red-lined. Blue meaning additions, red meaning subtractions or deletions. So, with that, I will now ask my staff, Alexander Schroeder, to please come forward. And I will start by moving Amendment 1. Is there...
Object for purposes of discussion.
Yes. Representative Hannon.
Thank you, Co-Chair Josephson. And mine is actually not about Amendment 1, but Amendments 1, 2, and 4 are all amendments to House Bill 53. But Amendment 3 is to House Bill 55.
Correct.
Okay. And so I'm just but it won't be Amendment. Okay, so it won't be it should be Amendment 1 is what I was thinking, but I wanted to separate them too, because we're not, you had said we have some mental health but it is, as it's structured, it is Amendment 3 is a pretty simple amendment to House Bill 55, correct?
That is correct. Okay. And we'll have...
And further explanation will come.
Yes. Representative Johnson.
So just so I know what we're doing today, so in response kind of to Representative Hannon's question, my understanding is we're going to do the public testimony, then we're going to take up the first three amendments.
So we did the public testimony and set aside
56.
Oh, that's
right. We did do it. We didn't have any public testifying. But okay. But anyway, we're going to take up, we're going to hear about the fourth amendment, but we're not going to take that up today. We're going to take up amendments number 1 and 2 and 3, which is the third and last one, would be the mental health budget, and then we would take up the fourth amendment another day. Is that correct?
Right. So what we're doing is orienting you to these topics. I don't mean to suggest you're not oriented, but we're describing what these are. And Mr. Schroeder and Ledge Finance are prepared to help us do that. And we'll also talk about ways to amend this that are not inconsistent, as I understand it, with an email you received last night. But remember, we are considering amendments today, first by orientation and explanation. And I think two of them are pretty perfunctory, but you may say I'm wrong, and so that's where we are. We may very well not adopt any amendments today, or the committee may find that two or three of them are ready to be acted on. And then tomorrow in our morning session, we will start in earnest on member amendments. Okay. So, Mr. Schroeder, if you'll come join us, I'd ask you to explain what Amendment 1 is.
For the record, Alexander Schroeder, staff to Representative Josephson. Good morning, members of the House Finance Committee. Before the committee is Amendment Number 1. This amendment includes an 11% cost of living adjustment for the Alaska Correctional Officers Association salary adjustments for a total of $14,393,500. It includes a salary adjustment for the Teachers Education Association of Mount Edgecombe. total of $167,500. It includes a salary adjustment for United Academics members for a total of $3,176,600. The overall cost of the amendment is $17,737,600 UGF. And that concludes the items in amendment number one.
Representative Stapp.
Thank you, Co-Chair Justin. Through the chair to Mr. Schroeder, or I guess anyone else who might know. So this looks like fairly standard contractual adjustments through collective bargaining agreements. I'm just curious. My memory serves me that these were either concluded at the end of last year or pretty close to that, and this was coming in one of the governor's amend. Is that correct, through the chair?
Mr. Schroeder.
Through the chair, Representative Stapp, to my knowledge, that's correct. Yeah.
And a quick follow-up. I don't expect you to have the answer, Mr. Schroeder. I'm going to ask the question on the record anyways. I'm just curious, if we have the contract last year, I understand that there might be a little tweaking, but I'm just curious why this wouldn't include it in the existing budget at the beginning of the year. But, I mean, I support the amendment, so it's not a big deal. It's pretty perfunctory. So, to the chair, that's all.
Mr. Schroeder, if you'd like to.
Through the chair, if it's all right, I'd like to call on Legislative Finance Division to answer that question.
Sure. Mr. Painter.
For the record, Alexei Painter, Legislative Finance Division. So these three contracts the negotiations were concluded this year.
Okay.
The deadline is day 60 for those in statute, so they were within the 60 days. The correctional officer's contract did expire at the beginning of this fiscal year. They did not come to an agreement at that point, so this agreement was reached in January through arbitration. So that's why it wasn't part of the governor's original budget.
Makes sense. Thanks.
Any other questions about Amendment 1? Is your mic open?
Okay. I remove my objection.
So, and I remove mine, because I think I made an objection. Is there any further objection to adopting Amendment 1? Seeing and hearing none, Amendment 1 is adopted without objection. We'll now go to Amendment 2. Mr. Schroeder, tell us about Amendment 2.
Through the chair, if I may, we might have to move Amendment 2 first.
Apologies. I move Amendment 2.
Object for the purpose of discussion.
And there's an objection. Now, Mr. Schroeder, tell us about Amendment 2.
For the record, Alexander Schroeder. Amendment number 2 includes all the subcommittee intent and conditional language. It also includes intent language for the Alaska Permanent Fund Corporation related to the Anchorage office. I can either walk through each item or take questions on specific items, whatever is the will of the committee or the chair.
Okay. But it looks like Representative Johnson.
Yes, I have a question. I mean, we were given instruction in the subcommittees not to put intent language in, and lo and behold, we have intent language, which is kind of unusual. I guess I would ask why we are doing intent language through a subcommittee process.
My quick understanding is that the subcommittees, and this is what I've seen historically, are allowed to recommend intent language, but we do not adopt it through their reports. Now, if you ask me, how is this different than just adopting them through the reports? I'm not sure I could answer. But I don't know if it's cultural. Essentially, the subcommittees are not given the jurisdiction to dispose of matters through intent language in their subcommittee report. I think I've said that right. Mr. Schroeder?
Through the chair, for the record, Alexander Schroeder, part of the reason that we didn't fold in intent language into House Committee Substitute 1 was to give the Legislative Finance Division more time to look over any of the recommendations and try to clarify the language in a way that would capture the intent of those recommendations. So they're coming in the form of an amendment to House Committee Substitute 1 rather than being a part of the committee substitute itself.
Or in fact, the subcommittee reports.
Through the chair, correct.
Yes. Given that there is a deadline in 3 hours and 7 minutes, I'm not going to ask for a vote on this matter. You may have amendments. For example, there are strong feelings about the Permanent Fund Corporation's opening of an Anchorage office, and I think that's a matter taken up. It is in this packet. There can be differences, obviously, of opinion about that. So I'll tell you what, I think that Representative Stapp, I think you had the objection. Do you maintain your objection?
Yeah, I have. I mean, through the chair, I guess to the chair, it's a little bit tricky because, like I said, if I have to operate under a amendment deadline, I don't want to eat my time to figure out what I want to amend since we're just now going over intent language. I would just say if you could just have your staffer hit the highlights, perhaps really relatively quickly.
You bet. I'd like it myself. Thanks. Mr. Schroeder, tell us what this amendment does. Highlights.
Through the chair, for the record, Alexander Schroeder, through the chair, it might be difficult to know what is considered important to different members on the committee. Is there any specific items that you want me to touch on? I could touch on items that are my opinion, but I don't think that would be very useful.
I'll give you one if I could, Mr. Co-Chair.
You bet. Representative Stapp.
Yeah, through the chair to Mr. Schroeder. Medicaid services, that's going to be line or number six. Intent language. Modeling Medicaid summaries, and then the temporary increment on page 7 through the chair.
And I don't see Ms. Rose here. For the record, she has expertise in this, but I suspect we could use a lifeline if necessary.
Through the chair, could we call on a lifeline?
Yes. Mr. Painter?
For the record, Alexi Painter, Legislative Finance Division. What was the question about this intent? Was it? I missed the question. I heard you'd like to discuss it, but not a specific question to me.
Okay. Representative Stapp.
Yeah, thank Co-Chair Justin through the chair to Director Painter. I'll just start. Let's do that's maybe the easiest one for this intent language on page 6 regarding the child care benefits. It says it's the intent of the legislature that child care funding be used to expand capacity in the child care sector, including through direct support for the workforce, innovation grants, including not but limited to expansion of facilities and matching funds to leverage local contributions. I kind of understand what we are looking to do there, but what is the practicality of that? Does that mean we're giving money to a third party to distribute the grants for us, or does that mean we're doing it directly through DECED? What does this exactly mean, through the chair?
Through the chair, Representative Stapp, I think that's more of a policy question. I can't really speak to the subcommittee's policy direction.
Okay. And that was Alexi Painter for the record.
And I guess follow up, Mr. Co-Chair.
Yes, follow up. Representative Stapp.
Yeah, thank you, Co-Chair Joseph, through the chair. I guess on page 7, the Medicaid services regarding the temporary increment for clinical behavioral health services. So, and this might be a Ms. Valerie Rose question, too. So I know that the department is creating their rebasing methodology regarding behavioral health and then looking to go through an amend process. And I'm not sure if those fall under its existing waiver authorization for the 1115 or not. But what are the mechanics behind a temporary increment in Medicaid services? Do we have to amend the state plan temporarily for 2 years to be able to do that? Through the chair.
If you know, Mr. Painter.
For the record, Alexi Painter, Legislative Finance. Through the chair, Representative Stapp, I believe since this is general funds that does not require plan amendment that this temporary increment is for, but I can get back to you with more specifics.
Okay. That's it. Thank you.
Okay. Okay. I think that we will are there any other questions about Amendment 2? Representative Bynum.
Thank you, Co-Chair Justison. Specifically to the chair, if I had my preference on this, I'd prefer to wait and take this item up tomorrow.
Okay. I think that's all I needed to hear, and I'm going to withdraw my motion as to Amendment 2. We will revisit this tomorrow, the 26th of March.
Thank you.
Let's move to Amendment 3, and this was the amendment that is in the mental health budget. Mr. Schroeder.
Through the chair, you might have to move the amendment first.
Apologies again. I move Amendment 3.
Object.
Object. Mr. Schroeder, tell us about Amendment 3.
For the record, Alexander Schroeder, through the chair, Amendment number 3 includes language for the collective bargaining units and grants the authority in the language section to appropriate the salary adjustments to the numbers section. That concludes the items in number 3.
All right. And I'll ask, are these items will be embedded in both 53 and 55 House bills?
Through the chair, to my understanding, yes, that's correct.
Mr. Chair.
Representative Stapp.
I don't mean to be difficult, but I will say mechanically I don't understand. We should adopt this amendment to this bill, set it aside, take up the next bill and adopt the amendment, or as Rep. Hannon said earlier, this should be Amendment 1 to Amendment to House Bill 56. So if we're amending House Bill 53, it's an amendment to House Bill 53. But if it's also going to be in House Bill 56, we should set aside House Bill 53 and then bring up House Bill 56 and amend that, unless I'm incorrect, through the chair.
Mr. Painter, could you approach and give us your opinion?
For the record, Alexi Painter, Legislative Finance. Through the chair, from staff, so for the operating budget, it is typical for the committee to hear both bills simultaneously and to hear amendments to both bills simultaneously. Many amendments have impacts on both bills. You can use mental health funds and non-mental health funds in one amendment. Because this is the language section, each bill does have an independent language section. It's unusual to have language amendments to the mental health bill. Usually that's done in a committee substitute, but in this case it's being done through an amendment. But numbers section amendments typically do touch both bills interchangeably.
Follow up, Mr. Kutcher.
Follow up. Yeah, Representative Stapp.
Thank you, Kutcher, Justin, to the Director Painter. I guess, how do I vote on one amendment that is adopted in two bills? I don't understand that.
Mr. Painter.
Through the chair, Representative Stapp. So Amendment 3 specifically only touches the mental health bill. The matching language is included on page 26, I believe, or page 25 and 26 of Amendment 4 for HB 53. So this is the HB 55 side. The HB 53 side is, I believe, page 25 and 26 of the other amendment.
Well, as long as you say we can do it that way, it's fine with me, through the chair.
Representative Hannon.
Thank you, Co-Chair Josephson. Mr. Painter, I'm mostly asking this so we can clarify our own thinking and get it correct on the record. Amendment number 3 on House Bill 55 does not repeat the dollar values, just affirms that we are funding those contracts that we are funding in 53 through Amendment 1.
Through the chair, Representative Hannon, this is a little unusual in that there's actually not funding for these specific bargaining units in HB 55. For simplicity and avoiding errors, typically we try to match between the two bills the same list of bargaining contracts, regardless of whether there's specific funding in either bill, just to avoid the error of missing one in one of the bills. So the funding is contained in the numbers section. What this does is adds these unions to the list of bargaining units that are the funding in the first section applies to. So it's a little odd in that there's actually not funding in the mental health bill for this, but keeping those sections together reduces errors overall.
Thank you.
Remove my objection.
So we have no objection to Amendment 3. Is there any further objection to Amendment 3? Seeing none, Amendment 3 is adopted. I now move Amendment 4.
Object.
Objection, a motion and an objection. Mr. Schroeder, please describe Amendment 4.
For the record, Alexander Schroeder. Through the chair, if it's all right, I'm going to refer to page and line numbers in the inline document provided to the committee.
Yes. Okay. So you'll see that marked as Amendment 4 backup, correct?
Correct. Okay. It might be marked, through the chair, it might be marked as the HB 53 language inline.
Okay. Please proceed.
So on page 59, this is amendment number 4 in the end line. On page 59, lines 1 through 9, we have deleted the Alaska Seafood and Marketing Institute funding. That was a supplemental item that we decided to move to the fast track, if I remember correctly. We also moved the AEA funding, the Alaska Energy Authority funding, out of this part of the language section because it will be, we decided to move it into the, we will be deciding to move it as an amendment to the numbers section where it's, where we've, it's more appropriately moved. And if there's any clarification on that, then I'd like to call on Legislative Finance Division.
Okay.
So moving forward on page 61, lines 4 through 13, it adds a new subsection under the Alaska Industrial Development Export Authority. Like the Alaska Housing Finance Corporation, this subsection appropriates ADA's interest earnings, loan fees, and other receipts to ADA and allows the corporation to transfer money between its funds. There is no material difference to the receipt authority in this amendment. This is standard appropriation language giving a state agency the legislative approval for their funds to be appropriated.
And I ask the members, don't be reticent, don't be hesitant. If you've got a question, as we march through, just let me know. Mr. Schroeder.
Moving to page 63, on line 15, you'll see.
Okay, Representative Johnson.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. There's a whole bunch of redacted language there. Maybe I wasn't paying attention. What's the redaction?
Mr. Schroeder.
Through the chair, the redaction is the section on the Alaska Permanent Fund Corporation. It's not language that we were going to be dealing with in this amendment. And in the amendment language, not the inline, but the amendment, it doesn't address this section, so we struck it out of the inline.
What does it address?
She asked what it addressed.
Through the chair, it addresses the section in the language section on the Alaska Permanent Fund Corporation and how those how that money is appropriated.
In other words, the redaction reflects that it remains in CS1, correct?
Through the chair, correct.
Okay. All right. Please proceed, Mr. Schroeder.
So on page 63, line 15, you'll see that administration is crossed out and replaced with law. And apologies. This modifies the section to refer to the department law rather than the Department of Administration. It is a technical fix in accordance with the administrative order in 2024 that transferred labor relations functions to the Department of Law.
Topic we discussed a lot in a lot of committees. Okay, please proceed.
On the same page, 63, lines 28 through 29, the request that the administration notify the Legislative Finance Division if a letter of agreement is terminated before the termination date specified in the letter of agreement.
All right, this was something I think Representative Hannon noted that it made its way into the amendment. Please continue.
Moving to page 66. Lines 18 through 21 adds a new section with an additional community assistance distribution of $6,666,700. When added to the distribution based on the June 30th, 2025 balance of the Community Assistance Fund, this will result in a total distribution of $30 million. It is a direct appropriation according to the formula, but instead of going to the fund, it is directly appropriated to its purpose. And this is based off of last year's budget language.
Okay.
Sticking to the same page, page 66, lines 22 through 28, it adds a new section appropriating the NRA license plate funds to a DCCED grant for scholastic clay target programs, and is similar to language in last year's operating budget.
Okay. Please continue.
Moving to the next page, 67, lines 25 through 31, adds a new section with contingency language for a $1,000 BSA increase from the statutory formula in case HB 69 does not pass or passes with a BSA increase under $1,000. And this is based off of last year's budget language.
Can I have a brief at ease?
Yes, brief at ease.
Thank you.
I mean, yes. We're back on record on the 25th of March at 2:10. We're discussing Amendment 4 of the House Budget Bill, House Bill 53. Mr. Schroeder, you were talking about page 67.
There were no other questions. For the record, Alexander Schroeder, through the chair, if there's no other questions, I'll move to the next item.
I have a question.
Yes.
Mr. Chair, thank you.
Representative Bynum.
Thank you, Co-Chair Justice, and through the Chair. Can you restate that section one more time, please?
Sure. Mr. Schroeder.
Through the Chair, on page 67, lines 25 through 31, it adds a new section with contingency language for a $1,000 BSA increase from the statutory formula in case HB 69 does not pass or it passes with a BSA increase under $1,000. The language is constructed to mirror last year's budget language with a similar style appropriation.
Chair Foster.
Thank you, Mr. Co-Chair. Just want to point out, and that would be a one-time increment as opposed to the bill, which would be recurring, correct?
Through the chair, Co-Chair Foster, that's correct.
And just for the record, in the past, in the recent past, we've had one-time funding that mirrors a BSA bill, and this is one-time funding that mirrors a current BSA bill that was adopted and passed by the House, I think, 24-16. So this is, but this also would make up the delta. If that bill comes in at a lower amount, subject to a veto, of course, this would make up the difference and provide one-time funding up to $1,000. Do I have that right?
Through the chair, that's correct. Okay.
Yes, Mr. Bynum.
Thank you, Ms. Co-Chair Justices. And so just for clarification, for a hypothetical current BSA bill that is currently passed the House and is in the Senate for consideration, or the other body, for further consideration, is HB 69. And currently that bill has an established BSA permanent increase of 1,000. So if for some reason that bill were to be amended to something lower, say 680 is an example, this language would basically say that 680 would become part of the appropriation due to the bill, making conforming changes of the bill and into 53, and then the additional delta would be considered a one-time funding grant to the schools. Is that accurate?
That is 100% accurate. And we could have a debate, although the floor is the proper place for it, about whether that would be as meaningful to the districts as a BSA. I think they, I know they'd say it isn't. But that's what this amendment would say. Representative Stapp.
Yeah, thank you, Co-Chair Joston. I have a couple questions on this in 14. So I get the language section amendment regarding the contingency language for a $1,000 BSA increase. My question is, doesn't the money actually have to be in the numbers section of the actual bill under the appropriation to the foundation formula?
No, because there may not be an appropriation to the foundation formula. There, Mr. Painter could describe it better than I can. But I'm confident that our $680 in previous years, $680 was in this part of the bill. Mr. Painter.
For the record, Alexi Painter, Legislative Finance Division. The chairman is correct that typically outside the formula funding goes in this section because it's an estimated amount. We don't know the student count. What goes in the numbers section for the foundation program is a small part of the funding. That's just the federal and other funds, or just federal now. And the remaining funding happens as a fund capitalization in this bill. That's, again, an amount estimated to be. So if a substantive bill passed, that amount estimated to be would increase, but this would pay the outside the formula amount. And again, it's an estimate. You know, we do this in the language because we don't know the actual dollar value needed to get to a $1,000 BSA increase because we don't know the student count at this point.
And follow up, Mr. Co-Chair.
Yes, follow up, Mr. Yep. Representative Stapp.
Yeah, thank you, Co-Chair Joston, through the Chair, Director Painter. I also see that this additional appropriation, it says it's appropriated from the general fund. My read on this budget, even through this amendment, is there does not appear to be enough general fund to appropriate some of these additions. So what do you do with a budget that doesn't have enough general funds to appropriate general funds, through the Chair?
Mr. Painter.
Through the Chair, Representative Stapp, I don't want to spoil Alexander's presentation, but at the end there's a section for the Constitutional Budget Reserve that calls for an additional draw. And I would also add that that language or similar language can be added in conference committee, so each body does not have to pass a balanced budget. It's the entire body of the legislature that needs to pass a balanced budget at the end of the session.
Thank you.
Okay. Thank you, Mr. Painter. Mr. Schroeder, we were at page 67 of the inline, as you called it. Let's move forward with the impact of Amendment 4.
Okay. For the record, Alexander Schroeder. Moving to the next page, lines 1 through 4, adds a new section increasing the pupil transportation formula with an amount of $6,781,200, a 10% increase over the statutory formula. In case HB 76 or an equivalent piece of legislation modifying the pupil transportation formula does not pass. This also is based off of last year's operating budget language.
And this is one-time funding, correct?
Through the Chair, correct.
And as I understand it, somewhat oddly, perhaps, my word, HB 69 didn't discuss transportation dollars. Am I right about that?
That's correct.
I'm getting indication that I'm right about that.
Through the Chair, I don't know the answer to that question right now.
Please proceed.
So on page 70, line 31 through page 71, line 5, this adds a new subsection for $5 million in backstop appropriation to the Alaska Marine Highway System in the event that federal funds fall short.
Okay. And I believe that this is an item where the other body is currently, everything's in dynamic, but currently they're discussing investing more in a backstop or $10 million. Is that your understanding?
Through the Chair, if my recollection is correct with their slides in the Senate Finance Committee, it does include a $10 million appropriation.
Okay. Again, this would be a conferenceable item, I assume. Representative Allard. Oh, I thought you. Okay. Apologies. If we were in Las Vegas, you just auctioned off something. Anyway, anyway, you're fine. Sorry. Let's move forward.
So moving to page 73.
Yes.
On line 21, there's an adjusted debt service number from $2,403,900 down to $144,127. This is a technical adjustment matching FY24 and prior language and results in a savings of $2,259,773 of UGF. The calculation was an error caused by taking the full amount owed instead of the annual payment for the debt.
Thank you. Some time ago, Representative Moore joined us. We thank her for doing that. Okay, we have a question, a couple of them. We'll start with Representative Tomaszewski and then go to Representative Bynum.
Thank you, Co-Chair Josephine. What happened to CS2? Seems like we're doing a lot of work here that could have been easily rolled out into a committee substitute number two. Why are we doing it this way?
Well, in part, that gets into, I'll put on my attorney hat, that's sort of a work product question. We're heading this way because we chose to head this way. I don't know what else to tell you.
If I could just follow up on that,
I will say that if these amendments are adopted, particularly this one, you're virtually at CS2. So we're well into this amendment discussion. We probably would have had this discussion anyway. So I think it bears fruit and has value. And this isn't terribly different than adopting CS2. And I would note that one benefit of the process is it's more transparent. It's more transparent than if we plop down CS2. Representative Tomaszewski.
I think it would have just been much easier. It seems like there's a lot of people, even members of your own committee here, that are trying to fumble along and see what you're doing here, since we just got these documents not very long ago. And it seems like it would just be a better process, but I guess we're going to do it this way. Thank you.
I'm not seeing lots of fumbling along. But Representative Hannon.
Thank you, Co-Chair Josephson. I believe that when you gave us instructions for amending, we were working with CS1, so any of us who have asked for amendments to be drafted to CS1, if we were to adopt CS2 today, they would be inappropriately drafted. So I believe the plan to work off of CS1 has been before us since Friday, I think it was Friday, when the amendment deadline was given, that was the version to have them drafted to.
Representative Bynum.
Thank you, Co-Chair Josephson. And just for clarification, I understand what the member was just saying is talking about trying to create amendments off of a CS that has not been presented. But my recollection is that there has not been a CS2 presented, even to make amendments on. So I wasn't sure exactly, just for clarity, what the member was trying to refer to, because we're working on CS1. And there hasn't been a CS2 released even for consideration or even review or to be looked at to adopt or not to adopt. Is that accurate?
I think it's completely accurate.
Yeah, thank you.
Representative Ballard.
No.
Oh, okay.
He's going to be a bid man something. I've never seen you give me so much time to want to speak.
I'm just trying to be receptive. Please continue.
Mr. Co-Chair.
Yes. Representative Bynum.
Thank you, Co-Chair Josephson. And just for clarification, I hate to put us in reverse here and go back a few pages. So if we just skip back really quick to 61, I just want to be page 61, just for clarity, and I'm sorry if I missed it, but on page 61 we have these blackouts that are on here, and I'm not exactly sure if something is being blacked out for a purpose here, or if this is just deleting this, that was maybe something that was here that we are considering is any of this document. I'm just kind of curious. I haven't seen this particular arrangement on documents other than things that are being blacked out for purposes of confidentiality. So I just want to make sure this is benign.
Mr. Schroeder, and then Representative Stapp.
For the record, Alexander Schroeder. So the amendment before you, on page one of the amendment, line five, it has it deletes all material between page 55, line one, through page 57, line three. And then if you flip to page three of the amendment, it ends there. Then it has page 57, line 23, through page 82, line one. So that break in those two sections is the redacted part in the inline. It's not addressed in the amendment, so we didn't think it'd be appropriate to address it in the inline. But that section is the section on the Alaska Permanent Fund Corporation, and if this amendment were adopted, it would include the original language from HCS1 for the Alaska Permanent Fund Corporation.
Thank you.
Okay. Representative Stapp.
Yeah, thank you, Justin. Couple of questions. I guess my first one is going to be, have we talked to Ledge Legal about the implications of adopting a ton of language sections amendments to this CS and then trying to amend other language section amendments later? Because I feel like in my head that would preserve a lot, that would create a lot of potential problems through the chair.
I know that this is best answered in first blush by Mr. Schroeder. Mr. Schroeder.
Through the chair, in my conversations with legislative legal, if this amendment were adopted and any other language amendments were to be put forward in front of this committee, we could take those amendments up, and if they conflicted with the adopted amendment, then we would and they were adopted, the standalone amendment was adopted for the language section, then that would become the amendment to not the amendment to the amendment, but it would effectively modify this amendment. So if this amendment were adopted, the chairman's amendment, and then another language amendment was put forward and that one was adopted, it would modify this one to reflect the newly adopted amendment. But I would like to rely on legislative legal to clarify that.
I don't know if they're – oh, lucky day. Ms. Wallace, it says that you're welcome for questions. Were you
– Hello.
Yes.
Hello, this is Megan Wallace, Chief Counsel, Legal Services.
Yes.
Would you like me to respond to that?
Yes. It sounds like you heard the question.
Yes, thank you. Again, Megan Wallace from Legal Services for the record. So as was previously mentioned, before you is an amendment to the CS1 as the committee is referring to it. If that amendment were adopted, it would affect substantially almost all of the language sections in the bill. If the members essentially procedurally will have a few options before them. When the amendment is moved, members can make amendments to the amendment, which would be very specific as to what portions of the amendment they would propose be changed or modified or removed. Alternatively, as the body moves through the amendment process, considering the scope of the amendment before you, it's plausible and likely that a member might have an amendment to CS1 that affects the same sections to which this amendment affected. And so it will be an amendment by amendment basis in terms of what the effect of that amendment is with respect to adoption of this, the amendment before you. And what I mean by that is a language amendment that adds new language that was not in either amendment is pretty clear and obvious that that language can go in because there's no conflicting, the amendments don't conflict. If the amendments conflict or attempt to amend the appropriations in different amounts, for example, in my opinion, those would not be what is referred to in the drafting manual as harmonious. And so members, through the Uniform Rule 10, the drafting manual is adopted and controls the drafting of bills and amendments. And the drafting manual specifically provides that if there are multiple amendments that are not harmonious that are adopted, that the last adopted amendment supersedes amendments previously adopted. And so if you have a section that is amended last in time in a different way than the amendment before you, that last in time amendment would control. It's a little confusing, but not totally uncommon for a committee to adopt multiple amendments that don't always aren't always harmonious. And so it would, if a member offers an amendment on a topic that is the subject of this amendment, I would recommend clearly stating for the record what the committee's intent is in adopting that second amendment.
Follow up, Mr. Co-Chair.
Yes, Representative Stapp.
Thank you, Co-Chair Justin, through the chair to Ms. Wallace. That was a little confusing. I will try to ask a very simple question. So if we do all these language amendments right now, and then tomorrow I have a bunch of language amendments, and then some of them get adopted, is that acceptable? And because what I heard you say is even if there is a conflict, basically last amendment to get adopted wins. Is that correct through the chair?
Through the chair, Representative Stapp, yes is the best way to answer that question. And in general, I mean, the answer may differ if something is really complicated that's presented to the committee. But in general, if you present a language amendment after adoption of this amendment, that second amendment will control if it conflicts with the language in the amendment before you.
Okay. Representative Bynum.
Thank you, Co-Chair Justison. And on the same topic, so right now we have staff vigorously working to accommodate the schedule we have for amendments. And there may be a case where if this is adopted, that it does, it basically creates a domino effect where it can pushes things around in here. So I'm assuming that if we have an amendment that is of the same topic and intent, the last amendment in that case would be the one that holds the day. But if I have an amendment that happens to point to a section that was there that's not now there, that is different in nature or an addition, how would we be dealing with that? Because unless if I would specifically instruct staff to draft an amendment for the current CS, and if this is Amendment 4 is adopted, it moves everything all around, potentially. My amendment that might be coming later might be pointing to somewhere completely different because we just passed a new version. So I'm just a little curious on how we would address that particular situation.
Ms. Wallace.
Through the chair, again, Megan Wallace, Legal Services, for the record. In the hypothetical that you presented, your amendment would not necessarily be in conflict with the amendment before you, and if it requires some conforming changes to ensure that it gets put in the bill in the proper place, or if any internal references need to be revised to accommodate adoption of the amendment before you, those technical changes are generally accommodated through the engrossment process of creating the CS that the committee adopts through the amendment process. Typically, the committee will give legislative, legal, technical, and conforming powers to make those technical changes. But even with that, without that specific language, in order to capture the intent of both amendments, Ledge Legal would typically work them into the bill so that they both work together where they are not inconsistent with each other.
Thank you. Representative Hannon.
Thank you, Co-Chair. And again, all of these amendments, including this Amendment 4, which is an extensive amendment, are to CS1. Even after adopting it, our amendments being drafted to CS1, it is not a new version of the bill because some of the amendments have been considered. It's still committee substitute 1 tomorrow with more amendments. And usually the magic phrase at the end of a lengthy amendment process is conforming language changes, because your amendment may have made a something section 12 and mine would also amend section 12, which is really now section 14, but that enumeration and those conforming changes aren't complicated. We're making it sound, because we're dealing with words and we're thinking about two places in time, but you know, we could have had 50 amendments out of this. It's being done as one, but it doesn't lessen that the amendments we take up tomorrow are still to committee substitute 1. This does not make it an amended version until we move the bill.
Okay, I don't see any other questions. Mr. Schroeder, would you take it from there, please?
For the record, Alexander Schroeder. So on sticking to page 73, our prior point of discussion in the inline was for lines 19 through 21, there was an adjustment to the debt service. On that same page, line 30, there's another adjustment to the debt service. It was adjusted from $460,839 down to $26,268. This was also a technical adjustment matching FY24 in prior language, with a savings of approximately exactly $434,571 in UGF. And this was also a calculation error caused by taking the full amount owed versus the annual payment for the debt. Okay. So moving to page 77 of the inline, lines 5 through 9, this restricts the Legislative Budget and Audit Committee to address revised programs legislatives, or RPLs, related to the Alaska Gasline Development Corporation. This is identical to language in last year's operating budget.
As to AGDC, or as to something other than AGDC, do you recall?
Through the chair, I think verbatim, this is the language in last year's operating budget. It was to AGDC specifically.
All right, please continue.
So on page 78, line 9 through 16, these both are for the same item, just in different places. This reduces the public education fund capitalization by $5,285,600 UGF to accurately reflect the statutory amount necessary when added to the projected balance of the account. I should note that a similar adjustment was made in last year's budget.
Okay.
So on page 82 of the end line, lines 28 through 30 adds a new subsection for the WAMI program partnership repayments. It appropriates those funds to the Higher Education Investment Fund and is based off of last year's language, which was vetoed by the governor.
Okay. Please continue.
On page 83, lines 25 through 28, you'll see what was in the mental health. You'll see language very similar or exact to the mental health amendment. This adds the collective bargaining agreement salary adjustments to the Alaska Correctional Officers Association and Teachers Education Association of Mount Edgecombe's salary adjustments. It's a governor's item. It also, Yeah, so that's that. Moving to the next item, pardon me. So on page 84, that continues the salary adjustments for the United Academics.
Okay.
Apologies. On page 86, line 23 to page 87, line 10, adds a special appropriation section which provides kicker language if there is a surplus in revenues for FY26, up to $700 million. 50% would go to the energy relief payment, and 50% would go to the budget reserve fund.
Okay, I want to have a little fun with some verbiage, the word kicker. So attributions to a former colleague of mine who became a very close friend of this body. But essentially what this does is, in the event oil prices spike substantially, then as I understand it, not in calendar year 25, but in calendar year 26, just as happened last year, there would be an addition to the permanent fund dividend. Is that your understanding?
Through the chair, that's my understanding.
So the vernacular of kicker is increase, I guess we could say. Representative Galvin.
Thank you, and this may be either to the chair or Mr. Schroeder, I'm not sure, but the way you just phrased it is that if, I want to make sure I'm hearing you right, if the oil prices spike, any additional prices, any additional dollars would go 50% to CBR, and then 50%, what I heard was energy relief, and I'm confused between the terms.
Mr. Schroeder.
Apologies. Could you?
Yeah. We could always, I bet our other staff, Mr. Alper, could be a good lifeline.
Okay.
But up to you.
Apologies. Through the chair, Representative Galvin, could you repeat the question?
I think I see it here, but what I heard from the chair, I see at the top of page 87, it says one-time energy relief payment. But the way I heard it from the chair, co-chair Josephson, is he used the word permanent fund. And I think what I'm hearing is that it would be permanent fund
dividend
recipients who would receive the extra funding in the form of an energy relief check. Is that correct? Am I hearing that properly?
It would be split up to a certain point of increase. I think it's up to $7 billion total revenue. Mr. Alper, do you want to come forward?
Good afternoon, Mr. Chairman. Thank you. For the record, Ken Alper, staff to Representative Josephson. So through the chair to Representative Galvin. It would not be a separate check. You'll recall last fall when we got our PFDs, there were $1,702. I don't remember the exact breakdown, but about $1,350 of that was the dividend as appropriated by formula by the previous legislature. The other $300 and change was from the 2023 session, where similar language had been put in for kicker language, supplemental dividend, energy bonus language. I apologize to former Representative Wohl. He put that into the vernacular. And then that $350 was added to it, and it was a combined single check. So the structure of this is modeled on what's been done the last two or three years in budgets. The number, the trigger number, is $6.3 billion. That's about $170 million greater than the spring forecast, 6.1. That first, and that formula has been followed in the past approximately. That first amount would be there for regular budgeting, supplementals, that kind of thing. Beyond the 6.3 and up to $7 billion, that's $700 million, so $350 and $350. $350 would be the additional payment with next year's dividend, roughly $500 per person, and the other 50%, and to Representative Galvin, she had said CBR, it would actually go to the SBR. Mm-hmm. The Budget Reserve Fund, Title 37, is the SBR. Mm-hmm. And then beyond the $7 million, the subpart B of this, If we get beyond $7 billion, the incremental money would flow automatically to the CBR, to the protected fund.
Okay, thank you. I think I'm more clear on that. And if I may have a follow-up, please.
Of course, follow-up.
Thank you, Co-Chair Josephson. So now I have a question about taxation on these dollars, just because I know in the past there's been some question around that where years ago, I think many years ago, maybe 15 or 20, there was an additional check that came. And I think one of them got taxed and another one didn't because it was called energy. And that's why I'm kind of triggering in on that word, is that it makes me wonder if there is any difference in, or will that check then be considered the same as anything else, any other PFD for our tax purposes?
Mr. Alper.
Through the chair to Representative Galvin, and I want to be careful to stay within what I know and what I don't know. I did formerly run the tax division, but I'm not a CPA, and I'm not in the nuance of federal tax law. There have been three of these payments over the years. The first one was during the Palin administration. It was an incremental $1,200, and it was called an energy bonus. The second one that came during the COVID time period, I remember there was some sort of order from the Department of Revenue at the time that said that the energy bonus part was somehow not going to be taxable. I don't know exactly why and what the federal tax reason was, and it might have been specific to something that happened during COVID. So I would want further clarification on that. And I don't recall any similar language or instruction to the $300 that was in the so-called energy bonus that we all received this past fall.
One thing I do want to note, am I right, Mr. Alper, that if this body or the House or the legislature adopts what's called a 75-25 dividend, that would be more than the actual dividend that was paid in October 2024? That part of the total that was described as actual dividend.
Mr. Chairman, the dividend that was approved by last year's legislature was structured on a 75-25 plus the energy bonus from the prior year. Now, the actual amount of 75-25 is a little bit higher. Right now, we're estimating around 1440 is the number been kicking around. Last year, it was 1350, 1360, something like that. The overall dividend of 1700 was the combination of that 1360 and the energy bonus that had passed in 2023. So a 75-25 would be smaller than last year's combined dividend, but larger than last year's appropriated 75-25 dividend, if that makes sense.
Yes, and one could argue it's nomenclature, I guess. But in a technical sense, I understand what you're saying.
Yeah, in a technical sense, Mr. Chairman, as the, I mean, you'll recall the HB 26 that created the POMV passed in 2018. The very first POMV that came to the legislature to appropriate from that was a bit over $2.7 billion. 6 years later, 7 years later, we're looking at 3.8. So we're benefiting collectively from the overall growth in the permanent fund value itself, and therefore 5% of that look-back formula is getting a bit larger every year.
Okay. Any other questions about these sections? We'll start here with Co-Chair Foster and move to Representative Bynum.
Thank you, Co-Chair Josephson. Oil right now is about, or it's expected for FY26, I believe, to be, was it 68? In order for this kicker to take effect, do we know all things being equal? I know that there could be a lot of things that change, but all things being equal, what does oil need to hit for this kicker to kick in?
Through the chair to Co-Chair Foster. So the forecasted price of oil for the coming fiscal year is $68 per the spring forecast. The current expected total revenue is $6.13 billion, plus or minus. So we're talking about $170 million above that. A dollar in the price of oil is in the $30 or $40 million, all other things being equal, as you said. So get $4 or $5 above that, call it, say, $73 a barrel, we start getting into the kicker space. And then the $700 million above that, maybe that's another $15 or so. So we're talking about the money that comes to the state between oil prices of 73 and 88 would be going towards these supplemental payments.
Thank you.
Representative Bynum, then Johnson.
Thank you, Co-Chair Josephson. And I was just going to make a comment that we use the term energy relief, but this no way creates relief for all of those living in Alaska. This is only tied to an additional dividend, basically. And so if you're receiving the dividend and we see these high prices, you will receive this money. But this in no way relieves us from the high cost of or the increasing cost of gas or increasing cost of electricity in our communities. And it's only tied to what oil revenues are doing. So I just wanted to make that abundantly clear to our constituents that may be listening that this is only really tied to an additional dividend component.
Not full relief, in other words. Representative Johnson.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Well, I guess I would say typically when oil goes high, we get a little bit more, but we also, people at the pump or by the barrel end up getting a little bit less. Anyway, so it is nice to have some extra. I mean, they end up having to pay more, too, so it does help to offset a little bit of their energy costs. But I did want to make note from our understanding, from our research on the energy relief is taxable.
Okay. Thank you, Mr. Alper. Mr. Schroeder, please see us to the end of the end line.
Sticking to page 80, for the record, Alexander Schroeder. Sticking to page 87, lines 11 through 18, adds constitutional budget reserve language to cover the amount necessary for all FY26 expenditures.
Representative Stapp.
Thank Co-Chair Justin through the chair to Mr. Schroeder or Director Painter, if you know, what exactly is the amount necessary to cover the amount of money in this budget from the CBR right now through the chair?
I know that it exceeds $2 billion, but Mr. Painter, if you know.
For the record, Alexi Painter, Legislative Finance Division. So the answer to that depends on the capital budget, which is not in front of the members. This budget does not have a capital budget. So, but roughly, since this CS1 has a statutory dividend payment of $2.5 billion matching the governor's, so the governor's budget had, with his capital budget of $294 million, the governor's budget has a deficit of about $1.65 billion. This, adding the primarily the outside the formula education money, that $250 million would add to that. So roughly $1.9 billion of a deficit, assuming the governor's capital budget, which obviously is outside the scope of this particular bill.
Fault, Mr. Co-Chair.
Follow. Representative Stapp.
Thank you, Co-Chair Foster. Okay. Joseph Foster, my apologies. Okay, so explain to me the logic behind a kicker language of oil prices going up to $73 or $86 in some sort of fantasy, and we're going to take some sort of 50-50 split, and we're going to take $2 billion out of the CBR and maybe put $300 million back. Why would we consider those things?
I don't think that Mr. Painter...
I'll direct it to you, Mr. Co-Chair. I don't understand the two language sections. So on the one hand, we say we're going to do a big CBR draw, which currently we'd have to cover $2 billion. And on the other hand, we're going to say, by the way, if oil price goes up in some legislative fantasy, we might put some of the money back.
Sure. I have a twofold answer. The first is that I'm confident... in fact, your question illustrates the dilemma that this body and the wider membership of the House will correct this math error. That's number one, so that our budget balances. Secondly, I think there is a sense among the Alaska people that when the state does well, the people should do well. And we've seen, as Mr. Alper described, that there's a tradition almost, certainly a couple, three times it's happened, or culture around that, and we wanted to reflect that. As you said, it's unlikely to occur, but it could. We've seen high oil prices. They typically don't sustain themselves for 12 months.
Follow up, Mr. Co-Chair.
Yes, follow up.
What is the logic behind taking out the CBR language in CS1 and now amending it back into CS1? Because the CBR draw language existed in the original budget. It was taken out in CS1, and now we're trying to put it back into CS1. And there's been lots of folks in the majority, especially this in the other body, that have said on the record multiple times that they are not going to approve a CBR draw, which, of course, is a big vote. So why did we take out the CBR language if we're just going to put the CBR language back in the budget?
Well, you're right that the other body has said they don't want a CBR draw other than the supplemental. I think you'll find that they're going to introduce a bill much like ours, or at least take it up. That is House Bill 56. The part of this is answered by the BSA, frankly. That helps answer the question about whether we need a CBR draw. So this is a dynamic process.
Mr. Kocher, one last follow-up, and then I'll leave it. I'll let the dead dog die, I guess. You took out the CBR language from this committee substitute. You did that, and now you're asking to put it back. The question is, why would you take it out if you wanted to put it back?
I'm not sure that I want to get into discussions between that I've had with the other body. I'm sorry.
Okay. Yeah.
Mr. Chairman, brief at ease.
Yes. At ease. On record.
I'm tired of it. Mr. Chair, you know, I've been shut down so many times, and I'm not trying to be contentious really here, but there's nothing wrong with having a robust debate about things. I mean, maybe it is just details, but at some point, you know, we need to just talk about what's going on. I don't quite know why there is a problem with this.
Representative Johnson, since you wanted to talk about things, I took this position on the 21st of January. Have I shut you down?
Shut me down.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I haven't. You haven't particularly shut me down, but I'll tell you what. I know I've been shut down, and as a minority member on the floor, I was told not to talk about a number of things. So okay. I just want to stand up a bit for open process and not having this conversation off the record.
Okay. But the record reflects that I essentially declined to answer the question. That's where we are on the record. Mr. Bynum, did you have a...
Yes, Mr. Co-Chair.
Yes.
Thank you, Co-Chair Justice. And I just wanted to clarify that the current language that's being added as far as the CBR Section 33, that this is just general language, meaning that if there's a shortfall in the budget, meaning that we are unable to balance the budget, that this language is in place to create that balance. And it's not tied to any one specific thing. Is that accurate?
Yes, that is accurate. Okay. We've been joined by Representative Elam, Representative Tomaszewski.
Thank you, Co-Chair Joseph, through the chair. I just wanted to go back to something you said a few moments ago about a math error. Can you explain to me what you meant when you said, was it the other body was going to fix the math error, or we're going to use this language to fix the math error? I think you were talking about the permanent fund. Can you extrapolate, or maybe it's something else?
Sure. The budget that the governor delivered, short of a large CBR draw, is not in balance. And so at the appointed time, this committee, probably within the next week, perhaps as soon as tomorrow, we'll have a robust discussion about correcting the putting us in a situation where the CBR doesn't have to be more than halved. Representative Galvin.
Thank you. I just wanted to add to this conversation at a very high level I look forward to the discussion ahead because I think we have a lot of difficult times ahead. I feel that when we have a budget handed to us that's over $1.5 billion in the hole, over 1.5. And I know that from in my little committee, subcommittees, in the very hard work that we have done, we added money, and I expect that we're going to be talking about cutting it out. I understand that, but I just want us to, as a body, appreciate that we're talking about $40 million and how to cut $40 million of whatever. That's about what was added, I think, roughly. And I know that we could also look into Governor cuts, things that he put in, and I think that everything should be on the table. I'm open to that discussion. I absolutely am. I think it's important that we all have it. And I want to thank you for creating the space to allow us to have that discussion because I think that's what the public is expecting. $1.6 billion is a lot of money, and that we don't have it, and so that will require a draw. We can't cut it. You can't cut out $1.6 billion. And so I just really appreciate that this is going to be a very robust and important discussion ahead, and I encourage everyone to stay tuned and be a part of it. And I thank you all for being here.
Okay. Mr. Schroeder, any other parts of the end line that you would like to address?
For the record, Alexander Schroeder. The remaining items are technical in nature. On page 87, lines 19 through 21, it adds lapse of appropriations language. On that same page, lines 22 through 29, it adjusts the retroactivity language to reflect new section references. On page 88, lines 9 through 11, it clarifies that the pupil transportation increase in section 14G of this amendment is contingent upon the failure of House Bill 76 or similar pieces of legislation.
Okay. All right. That concludes. I'm going to, so the record's clear. Did you have a question, Representative? Representative Bynum.
Thank you, Co-Chair.
I see a lot of sort of hand gestures in this area. Representative Bynum.
And again, I just page 88, this last section that you just referenced, this is similar to the same language that we had talked about earlier for the base student allocation. Is that correct?
Mr. Schroeder.
Through the chair, this one is related to the pupil transportation increase, but is a former reference in this.
It's the same effect, but a different bill, different funding source.
Through the chair, Representative Bynum, that's correct.
Thank you.
Okay, so, yes.
I'm sorry, sir. I did have a couple quick questions for the chair, and it has to do with the process and information. So currently right now we have this number section that is in front of us. We just went through it all. The language section. And there are implications to the overall budget from this section. And then we'll have the number section. When we look at all of this holistically, there are some reductions here, there are adds here. Will we have available to us a summary, a spreadsheet summary showing the monetary changes for this from your office or from staff?
We can try to get you something. So monetary changes were identified when we adopted CS1 at some length, totals. And so if this, for example, Amendment 4 was adopted, you know, you would, frankly, I'm not sure if I don't know that our ledge finance or ledge legal teams, because we're in a dynamic position, would be capable of producing that number. I guess they would be. But for example, we know that this spends, if adopted, would spend about $250 million more on public school, a little more with transportation dollars, and then there were some savings that were identified. Mr. Painter, do you know if it's possible to... Mr. Painter, come forward. Yes. Would you...
For the record, Alexei Painter, Legislative Finance Division, yes, we can provide that. Or I was going to do it right then and provide a number, but if you want to wait, then I will provide it at a later time.
Okay.
So follow up?
Yes.
Thank you for that. I really appreciate it. It'll help kind of as we're going through the process to kind of understand where we are with the numbers. And one of the backing up, one of the things that we had put in here, there was some language specifically about the BSA with reference to HB 69. But HB 69 has additional spend items that are in it that are not included in this. Is that accurate?
Absolutely accurate. I haven't seen whether the Senate has adopted a CS, Senate education, but to my knowledge, it's accurate. It's $22 million accurate.
Is it possible to also get from finance what the financial implication potentially is of 69? Because this doesn't fully address the financial impacts of 69 were to pass, and we need to do conforming changes to the budget. I don't know exactly what those numbers are. There was no fiscal note.
And as I said, this is very dynamic. We will know on the 122nd day what happened with finality. Mr. Painter?
Mr. Chairman, or through the chair, Representative Bynum, the Department of Education did prepare fiscal notes that were delivered to the Senate Education Committee for the version as passed by the House floor. So those are available to see the cost, but it's roughly $22 million. I think it's, I don't remember the exact number, in addition to the BSA change, but those are on basis and on, in our fiscal note system from the Senate Education Committee.
So for clarity, those were provided in Senate Education. Correct. Okay. Thank you. Okay. And then I had one follow-up,
yes,
final question.
Mr. Bynum.
So one of the other items that we've, Co-Chair Josephson, one of the things that we've been talking quite a bit about is we can obviously look at the budget and see where we're currently at in the budget. We went through the subcommittee process. We got to the CS1. We have a good idea of what the ads are there. The big issues that we were talking about, as one of the other members had mentioned, is talking about where we have to meet this gap. And so there's a lot of conversation happening on what's going to happen with the education bill, with funding for education, and then the dividend. One of the things that we didn't talk about today, and probably not appropriately included in this conversation, but a big question mark, is talking about the capital. And I know that we can see currently that we have a capital budget that we've started to talk about. There is a number associated with that, but we don't have any new numbers for or any adds to the capital budget as of yet. And I was just wondering what the impact would be with the CBR language that we have in this bill for overall changes that we would see in the capital budget when we actually get to it. How is that going to balance? I don't know if that's a clear question, but I'm just trying to get a better idea and understanding of right now we have not talked about capital. There's no additional money for capital at this point. I know there's some ask for that, but we have not done anything with that. So I'm just wanting to understand the CBR language that's in this bill on how the other bill that we would pass for capital would be impacted in this bill.
I think this bill says that the money is not designated for any purpose other than funding the whole of the budgets, plural. And therefore, theoretically, with this CBR language and affirmative votes, a capital budget would be fully funded, unless it was more than $2.7 billion. Mr. Painter.
Mr. Chairman, that's correct. The CBR language that's in this amendment just says appropriations that take effect in FY26. It doesn't specify operating or capital appropriations.
So it covers all of the outstanding bills, the mental health bill and the capital bill. Thank yes. you, Chair Josephson.
Okay. So I wanted to, and Mr. Schroeder, you'll tell me if I got this wrong, but as I heard Ms. Wallace, I'd like to clarify the amendment process in light of the language amendment to House Bill 53. You can either offer standalone language amendments to HCS-1 or offer conceptual amendments to this Amendment 4 language amendment. You sort of can't get it wrong, in other words. Legislative legal spoke to that. If you choose to offer conceptual amendments to Amendment 4, well, can't brief at ease. We're back on record on the 25th of March, House Bill 53. If you choose to offer conceptual amendments to Amendment 4, the amendment we've spent most of the time discussing, I'd ask that you not submit them as a standalone amendment or we'd have redundancy. That should be fairly obvious. If you choose to offer standalone language amendments, if any are adopted and they conflict with previously adopted amendments, the standalone amendment will modify any previously adopted amendment. I think that was very clear from Ms. Wallace in her exchange with Representative Stapp. Are there any questions for Ledge Legal or I or myself? I don't think so. Yes, Representative Bynum.
Thank you, Co-Chair Justice. And so to be very clear, our amendment deadline at 5 o'clock today is for any amendments that we're going to be turning in that are standalone. If we have an amendment to the amendment, which is that's what we have here because mm-hmm. this will be brought up, those we should hold on to until we get to this item. Is that accurate?
Well, they're still due at 5, but you could offer them as a conceptual amendment. And Ledge Legal or Ledge Finance, I think it's Ledge Legal, would help you draft them.
Thank you.
Okay. Our next House meeting will be Wednesday, March 26th at 9 a.m. At that meeting, we'll begin to take up action on amendments to House Bills 53 and 55, the operating and mental health bills. We are going to the floor tomorrow. What I anticipate happening is that we will run from 9, I guess, to just 10:30, depending on when that's scheduled. We would resume at 1:30, and we may go fairly deep into the night. We will try to keep you nourished, because that's important. And with that, the House Finance Committee will be adjourned at 3:11 p.m.